Hi, welcome to the Dental Talk Show. I'm your host, Luke Peters.
So, success in the dental practice doesn't just rely on your ability to properly manage the clinical and practical parts of the practice, but also depends on the running of the business side of it as well. So today I got to speak to an expert in the business side of things, and that was John Grant from Goodman Grant Lawyers, and they specialise in the dental industry. And the first question I asked John was about incorporating your dental practice into a dental corporate.
Before 2006, there were 29 what we call dental corporates, in other words, dental practices which could run under the guise of a limited company.
Yeah.
With limited liability, shareholders, etc. In 2006, they amended the Dentist Act so that provided there is not a majority of non-dental directors or registered DCP directors, limited companies can own dental practices. Mm-hmm. Anybody can be a shareholder, but you need to basically have a clinical director to make sure that clinical matters are being put before profit, for lack of a better word. And so, not initially, but certainly from probably 2009 onwards, I would say, we saw an increasing number of practice owners being advised by their accountants that there were significant tax savings to be made if they incorporated their practice. In other words, if they sold the assets of their practice to the limited company, of which they were the sole director and shareholder, or sometimes their wife could be a shareholder and director as well.
Okay.
The tax saving is not that difficult to understand, and in a lot of cases the tax saving is considerable. The problems that we are coming across emanate primarily from the fact that people are receiving this advice from non-dental specialist accountants. And even within the dental specialist accountants, there seems to be a split between those accountants who think that all of their clients should incorporate, and other accountants who will carry out a thorough incorporation assessment and who have determined that it's only right for a number of their clients. The problems that we are coming across, I'd say the most common problem is that although the practice may have been incorporated, the NHS contract has remained in the name of the individual dentist. Now, again, there can be a number of reasons for that. The first is, I say, that if it was a non-specialist dental accountant, they may not have even appreciated or considered the fact that the NHS contract needed to be transferred into the name of the limited company. Or a lot of PCTs, as they then were, if a request was made to them to allow the contract to be transferred to the limited company, we're turning around and saying, no, you can't do that. And again, if I can just take a step back, the reason for that is that initially when people were going to PCTs and saying, can we have a new contract in the name of the limited company, PCTs were saying yes. Some of those practices were then sold, and what you will do sometimes with a limited company, instead of selling the assets, instead of selling the goodwill and equipment, you will sell the shares in the company. So the contractor, the limited company, stays the same, but the people who own that limited company change.
Right, okay.
And then PCTs discovered through that that suddenly they were dealing with people that they weren't originally dealing with, they weren't the original contractors, so they had lost control. And if there was one thing that PCTs didn't like, it was losing control. So once the PCTs, once this dawned on PCTs, you then typically had two scenarios. If you asked them if you could have a contract in the name of the limited company, they would either say no, or they would say yes, but. And again, that but of itself could cause significant problems, because the but was, yes, you can have a new contract, but in this new contract, we're going to put in it what we call a change of control clause.
Okay.
Yeah, effectively, you're going to ask me what a change of control clause. Well, let me tell you. Change of control clause basically says, if there's a change in shareholders,
yeah,
we, PCT, reserve the right to terminate the contract. Yeah. So then you are effectively potentially losing the ability to sell your practice, because you go to the PCT and say, we want to sell the shares to Mr. X. PCT can turn around and say, no, we'll have, if you don't want your UDAs, we'll have them back. Thank you very much.
I see.
Well, one of the further problems that happened then was that pretty much every PCT in the country seemed to have a different attitude. There were some that would say yes, there were some that would say no, there were some would say yes, but you can have them with a change of control clause. But the change of control clause itself was worded differently. Similarly, we recently saw a change of control clause where the effect of it, the way in which it was drafted, meant that the mere act of asking for permission, never mind actually transferring, but asking for permission, triggered the PCT's right to terminate the contract. Because of those issues, we come across a number of situations where there's been an incorporation, but the NHS contract is still in the name of the individual. Now, we know that if the Inland Revenue come across that situation, that they will not accept that there has been a proper transfer of the goodwill of the NHS to the limited company. They will say, no, contract is still in the name of the individual, therefore the goodwill still remains with the individual, so we want back, please, all of the tax that you have not paid us over the past few years. Second thing is, if we're acting for somebody who's buying an incorporated practice,
yeah,
and we see that the NHS contract is still in the name of the individual, our argument is exactly the same. You can't say the limited company owns the goodwill because the NHS contract is still in the name of the individual. So you, the individual dentist, is going to have to sell the goodwill, which means unravelling the incorporation. I should say that the other problem that people don't appreciate is a lot of people are being advised when they're buying a practice to incorporate, so in other words, to form a limited company under which to trade before they have acquired their practice. Such advice, quite frankly, is born of ignorance insofar as NHS practices are concerned,
right?
Because the partnership route, to which I alluded, which is the method which we have used to enable people to buy and sell NHS practices, is not open to limited companies. What the regulation says, if you are a dentist, you can bring another dentist into partnership. What they don't say is that if you're a dentist, you can bring a limited company into partnership. And even if that were possible, there's no provision to allow, if they manage to form a partnership, to enable the seller to retire from the partnership. So these are big issues.
So thanks very much to John Grant there. I hope you found that information really useful and interesting. Unfortunately, we didn't get his business partner, Ray Goodman, to come along. He had something else he had to go away to do. But hopefully we're going to get them both in together and do this as a regular thing, because I found the guys have got some really interesting insights into the dental industry and the business side of things and legal side of things. Another thing we're going to do is do an audio podcast, so you can listen to it and download it from iTunes. And this will be a longer format, so you can get a lot more in depth than the video version. So if you add your questions down below or add your comments and let me know, maybe we can ask them at the next interview I do with them. To find out previous episodes of the Dental Talk Show, visit the website dentaltalkshow.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Dental Talk Show. So thanks very much for watching, and I catch you next time.